We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Welcome to Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Our rock star today is Jeff Zucker. I mean, I look like the Jeff Zucker you know, but it's Jeffrey Zucker, who is the co-founder and president of Green Lion Partners. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
Now, Jeff is in a billion-dollar business that's just, I think, just now starting to explode, right?
Absolutely. I mean, over the past few years, the cannabis industry has really taken off.
Jeff's in the cannabis industry, and we drug tested him, and he's cool to sit here for a while and not fall asleep on us. But seriously, how do you help the cannabis industry?
Our company, Green Lion Partners, we help entrepreneurs to raise money to pitch, as well as to figure out how to scale their business for this growing space. Figure out how best to make their business really work as the industry grows.
Because you had a nice roll-up, illegal roll-up, not you, but I mean, before all these laws are passed that legalized marijuana. So you got to watch it kind of grow exponentially without any supervision.
Yeah, I mean, it's really been a one-of-a-kind space to be able to watch what's happened with it over these years. I mean, it's a space where you know there's buyers, you know there's people using it in all of these different places. So why not make it safe, regulated, and taxed to help improve our economy, to help improve, you know, lives for medical patients, and to help improve, you know, people that are stuck in jail.
They're not going to be in jail long, by the way.
Exactly.
Did you always want to be an entrepreneur?
I did. I grew up, you know, with a father who was an entrepreneur that I got to learn a lot from. You know, I went to college at Boston University, and I'd been working in food service trying to figure out where I wanted to go, and saw an opportunity to start a real estate development company while I was in school, and my entrepreneurship took off from there.
What's the worst job you ever had?
The worst job I ever had is, you know, I try to make the most of every job. I try not to think any of them negatively, but I worked at an ice cream. I worked at an ice cream shop for a summer. You know, it was definitely...
Everybody says that. What's wrong with ice cream shops?
Well, I think one, you get sick of the ice cream, and two, you know, just dealing in the heat with people that are exhausted and, you know, trying to find this relief with ice cream. And it can be a hectic space. I mean, I was 15, 16 at the time, so it was a great learning experience.
What do you care? Right. Yeah. Green Lion Partners, what's a typical day over there?
Well, my office is a combination of Salt Shaker Holdings and Green Lion Partners. Salt Shaker is my kind of non-cannabis company, real estate, film production, angel investing. And, you know, in our office, I spend about 70% of my time right now on cannabis. And the rest of our office is, my partner Mike is also focused on Green Lion. And for the most part, it's just kind of figuring out which companies have the next thing going that we need to really take a look at and help move forward, as well as figuring out what the next steps are for our individual companies on a daily basis. Yeah.
In putting your business together and keeping it going, what kind of software and apps and that sort of thing do you use? I assume you're computerized.
Yes, absolutely. We use a lot of digital solutions. Slack is one that we use a lot for internal project communications. We also use Telegram, another messaging app that's just for internal communication that's not project specific. And overall, you know, we use the Google suite of softwares, we're looking at Asana right now. We're just kind of getting started with that. And overall, we try to bring as many tools in as we can to increase our efficiency.
How do you come up with new ideas? I mean, the newest idea is you can buy pot here.
Right.
Then what?
In this industry, a lot of the new ideas come from looking at other industries and what's been successful. How can we translate that into cannabis? And I think that a lot of these new ideas, there's two different versions. There's ones that people have brought over that are going to be relevant still once, you know, we do have federal legalization. And then, you know, sort of the softwares and services that are built specifically for the industry. And then you've got things like banking initiatives that, you know, are maybe trying to fix some issues that we have right now with the banking system but that will end up being moot points. You know,
I watch these movies. It's just mountains of money being shoveled literally into a back room,
right,
and then laundered. And I got to think that's over.
Absolutely. That's definitely over. I mean, the people that are licensed in regulated businesses, they're trying to be as responsible as possible. They're using software like FlowHub to maintain their compliance. And from the banking perspective, you know, a lot of these companies that are touching the cannabis plant directly, they do have a lot of cash on hand, and that's led to really heavy security. And it's a security risk, you know, that the industry is aware of, and it's one of the biggest problems in the space. But they're finding ways to conquer it until the banking catches up. Right.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Pat O'Brien. This is Business Rockstars. He's Jeffrey Zucker, co-founder of Green Lime Partners. This whole cannabis industry is new, right? I mean, relatively new.
Relatively.
So what about the people that started on their own? Would you reach out to them and help them organize?
You know, absolutely. In terms of starting—
For example, in Portland, there's probably a cannabis store every 20 feet.
Right. I think that as the industry grows, we're going to see consolidation in places like that, you know, especially in California as it becomes more regulated. But we're interested in helping, you know, any businesses that are up and coming in this space that have a long-term vision for the future and that want to be foundational pieces of the industry.
What is a long-term vision of the future?
I see the cannabis industry—
Don't smoke your product, right?
Consumption of the product is good at the right times. You know, I think it can be very helpful in a variety of ways, not, you know, from the medical perspective, but also, you know, from the personal perspective. And I think long term, this is something that's going to be more and more, it's going to be more and more mainstream, and we're just going to see it grow over the years. And I think that it's going to be a general, normal part of everyone's life.
How would your employees describe you as a leader?
I would say that they would say that I'm very welcoming, open and honest, but I can be stern. I try to make sure that everyone is enjoying what they're doing and that they're happy in their position. And if they're not, I try to figure out how best to get them there while still accomplishing what we need to.
How would they describe your management style?
I think they would describe my management style as stern, but friendly and approachable.
How many states is it legal in now?
We're over 30 states now. We, you know, going into the election, we were at, I think, 26, so we should be at around 35 right now.
Okay, so how many times do the rules change every time a state comes in?
It changes on, you know, the state-by-state basis, and individually by state, it doesn't change so much. So it's really just trying to navigate the individual markets. It's really difficult to understand kind of the nuances in each different state, and that's something that, you know, there are specific companies that focus on that. But as we become more, there are more and more states involved, I think eventually we'll have things that are a bit more widespread in terms of how to manage the space.
It's such an unusual job, isn't it? I mean, for me, I grew up in the 60s where, you know, we had to meet you at this corner or meet at this corner, or put the dope under my car. It's just such an unusual thing now.
It's definitely something.
To me, it's weird.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's the way that people have grown up in the United States and kind of the stigma that's been around, you know, marijuana over that time. It's going to take some evolution, some getting used to. And I think that, you know, the kind of that situation that you describe where you're going in and having to put something under a mat, I think people
it's in
are
my college days, right, by the way.
I think people are sick of that. And, you know, when I talk to people that are in states that are illegal and they're saying how they have to do something sketchy like that, and then they hear about my experience, you know, living in Colorado, being able to walk into a store, discuss what each strain is going to do for me, do for others. You know, it's creating jobs, tax revenue. I think that it's really going to be something incredible long term. And while it may seem strange, I think it's going to become part of the norm.
Yeah. I was in a park in Portland and I actually asked a cop, I said, can I smoke here? And he said, absolutely not. It's all right. Then he chased me down and said, cigarette or marijuana? I said, cigarette. And he said, well, you can smoke marijuana here. You can't smoke a cigarette.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So everything's changing in this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of public consumption, there aren't many places that allow it. Denver had an initiative 300, that passed. So it's going to allow local businesses to apply for social consumption licenses. So people that, you know, live in apartment buildings or homes that don't allow it, or tourists, are now going to have businesses where they can go and consume safely.
Are these all these businesses profitable?
Right now, no. I'd say that's probably a misconception that there's, you know, people are swimming in cash in this industry. You know, the cultivators and dispensaries are taxed very heavily, over 70% rate. And the businesses that I work with, the softwares and services that are really trying to grow, really, they have a long-term vision in mind. I don't see most of them being incredibly profitable for, you know, say 5 years or so.
Really?
There's money coming in, but a lot of it, there's growing going on with these businesses, the business process companies.
Who did you lean on to get information about this?
About the cannabis industry?
Yeah.
So a very close friend of mine, Evan Nissen, runs a PR firm in the cannabis industry, and he was sort of our first point of contact in the space, and he made some great connections for us to guys like Leslie Boscor from Electrum Partners. Yeah. And we're also investors and members in the ArcView Investor Network, and that's been an incredible space for us to both network as well as find companies to invest in.
Did you ever think you'd be involved in the cannabis business legally?
If you had told me, you know, in high school that I was going to be working in the cannabis industry, you know, 10 years down the road, I would have been pretty flabbergasted at the time. You know, it's not something that I ever would have imagined. Right.
Have you heard about Newsmax TV? It's America's fastest growing cable news channel in 70 million homes. Every minute, every day, watch Newsmax for breaking news on President Trump. Plus, get insights from Bill O'Reilly, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, Mike Reagan, and more. You can find Newsmax TV on DirecTV, Xfinity, Dish, Optimum, Spectrum, Fios, UVerse, Suddenlink, Wow, and dozens of cable systems. So check your guide now and watch Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
Guess what? Right now is the perfect time to tackle those home projects you've been putting off. So come summertime, you can just sit back and relax. HomeAdvisor can help get you started. HomeAdvisor matches you to the right pro for the job in seconds. You can read reviews and even book appointments online. HomeAdvisor can help with any home project, big or small, painting, plumbing, even remodeling. Find a great pro now before the busy season hits. Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app. HomeAdvisor.
This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Patrick Sikanis is joining us right now. He's the CEO and president of Determine. It's a pleasure to have you on the show with us.
Thank you, Mark. How are you?
So, I'm doing fantastic. Thanks. I want to hear about your business. What do you do?
Great. So, Determine really empowers companies' decision-making processes. So, we provide them with the technology that allows them to manage, track their suppliers, contracts, anything that's associated with contracts and suppliers, as well as being able to use those suppliers for all of their employees to buy things, so catalogs and things like that. So really help workforces empower their employees to make better decisions.
My guess is this is probably not your first business, or is it?
No, okay. Obviously not.
I was going to say, you don't usually get into that type of business if that's your first business.
Yeah, no, but interestingly enough, there was a trend that that I spotted here a few years ago that allowed me to be in this position. I've done entrepreneur type things for a number of years.
Well, take us back to the beginning. What was your first company?
Sure.
I want to know what led to this.
Well, there's actually a spot before that, if you're okay with that. I actually grew up on a dairy farm, and my dad, brothers are entrepreneurs, and they turned a small, little business into a major production environment. And growing up in that world, I kind of learned to figure out and fend for yourself and be creative and figure out things. So got out of there in the late 80s and went on to start a company in the CRM space, the software as a service type thing, and worked with a New Zealand company who were great entrepreneurs, understood the business, and really was way ahead of the SaaS curve, if you will.
Okay.
And it was an interesting time, sold the business, went on, did a few other things, and then 2005 founded another company called Force Logix, where we again saw a trend.
Yeah.
In the space, and I was able to take that public in 2010, sold it in 2012.
Congrats.
And then thanks.
Exciting times.
Yeah, it was exciting. And then we a little consulting for a couple of years, and then I joined Determine almost 3 years ago, where it was a small little entity, and we've done several acquisitions now to get to where we are today.
Well, I want to pinpoint the going public.
Sure.
Not a lot of companies probably ever will experience what that is like, so break it down. What was it like from your experience?
Well, it was a small, small company. This was 2008, 2009, when there was venture capital money available. However, it was very hard to get at. You had to have a lot of work done far down the road before you'd be able to get venture capital. It was different a few years before that. It was different a few years after that. But in the 2008, 2009 timeframe, there was an opportunity to take a small company on the Canadian Stock Exchange, actually, and pool some money together through a system that they had. It was interesting. It learned a lot. Even though it's a small IPO and a small company, all the same rules apply as it relates to what you need to do, security, building it, putting it together. And it was great. It was a great experience. And we were able to launch that into the sale of the company a couple years
later. Well, I don't think a lot of people understand the right timing or how to make the distinction between when I should go public. And it sounds cool and exciting, but I've also heard a lot of people say it can also be very detrimental to a company. And we had the billionaire Tillman Fertitta sitting where
you were.
And he talked about taking his company public, made $100 million basically overnight, then built it to a multi-billion dollar company, economy crashed, bought back all of his stock, then took the company private again.
Yes.
So I'm curious from your perspective, though, you know, how does somebody or how did you guys make the decision that going public was the right move?
Yeah, it was, you know, there was some part of it was necessity, right? We needed capital. We wanted to raise money. And at the time, venture capital money was tight. There were some opportunities for us to do it. But the valuations that they're willing to give us versus the public market were anywhere close. So we were able to actually get the public market excited about what we were doing and pool enough resources together to take the company public. And it actually ended up introducing us to the company that actually ended up buying us. So they were a large investor in the IPO and ended up making the acquisition a couple years later.
Well, I think you're living the dream. You had a company you took public and sold. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs plan to do that. We've got the CEO and president of Determined, Patrick Sirkanis, joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack. And we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. What do you feel like on your journey has been one of the biggest lessons you've learned? Not a lot of entrepreneurs that sit in this chair have gone through all of the business iterations you have, grown and sold companies like you have, and taken companies public like you have. So I'm curious from your perspective as an entrepreneur who's had a pretty exciting journey, what do you feel like are a couple of the biggest aha moments you've had?
Yeah, the key thing I think to a lot of people is they have a great idea and they want to rush out and say, everybody wants this, right?
Yeah.
But there's a tremendous amount of homework that needs to be done and data that needs to be analyzed before you do it. And I will tell you that in 2005, when we launched my first startup with my partner, back then, we knew we had a great idea. We knew people wanted it. We knew there was a market for it. But again, you have to look at, is there a market for what you want to sell? And can you build something fast enough to meet the needs of that market or actually exceed the needs of that market? Mm. And then you have to get the right people on it. So the thing that I took away from this, and not only from an entrepreneurial perspective, but from any business standpoint, right? Regardless of what you're going into, make sure the company or the idea that you have, that there's a market for it, that somebody actually wants it.
Yeah.
A lot of people say they might want it, but will they practically use your products?
Yeah, and then, people go around and say, oh, a lot of people told me they'd buy this. But if you've ever watched Shark Tank, right? It's like the money in the bank, actual tangible sales is what validates it, not people saying it.
That's exactly right. And I think that's an interesting point because Shark Tank, I watch it all the time because I'm interested about these ideas.
We had Damon on here.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, it's really is that. I mean, they may think it's a great idea and people may say, but if those people will actually give you money, if they will help you find customers, then you know you're onto something, right? And even if before the market's there, but maybe a better idea, which I've learned over time is, maybe don't reinvent a wheel, but find a market that's already out there. That
or as you've done, a trend.
See the trends. That's
exactly. You've been great on capitalizing on those.
1998, I should say, saw a trend in consolidation on the sales side with businesses and Salesforce Automation, what Salesforce.com did. And then 10 years later, a little bit more, saw the same trends happening on the procurement side, which is why I joined Determined to bring those things together. But
I think that you made some great points on what a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs make mistakes on. Let's talk about somebody who's maybe a beginning entrepreneur to a seasoned entrepreneur. What do you think are some of the big mistakes you see business owners making?
Yeah, they just don't arm themselves with enough data, right? And I think that's the key piece here. Whether it's, let's just actually talk about how we use data today, right?
Yeah.
So entrepreneurs, they have an idea, they get an investor and off they go. And maybe they don't take enough time to really research it and really how to go fast and go easy. I mean, we don't do anything as a society these days without data. We don't go out to dinner, out to lunch. If I'm going to spend $50 for lunch, I'm going to take a look and read the reviews and
Yelp,
who has gone there, Yelp, OpenTable, all that stuff, and not make those decisions until I have data. And 10, 15 years ago, we didn't have that opportunity. I remember buying my first house, right? I walked in, I like it, bought the house. Didn't look at the, you know, all the information around it or the neighborhood or all those things. And the same with dinner. We just don't go out to lunch without having the data that we need. Well, in now, young entrepreneurs, they have the ability to do that research.
Yeah.
The internet is there. You know, friends, relatives, everyone that they know has a business somewhere, has their fingers in something.
Yeah.
So the opportunity to really dig deep and research and understand what you're getting into before you get into it is a hell of a lot better than really just jumping into it and doing it. Because there's three things that are going to happen, right? Either you're going to take off with your idea, your idea is going to fail quickly, which both are good, by the way. The worst is getting caught in that middle and just trudging on, spending money, and never actually going one way or the other. And then if it drags out, then you got trouble.
I love that advice. I'm excited to come right back with Patrick Stakanis to talk more about what makes his company successful. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we connect a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Vivian Williams. Chronic pain, whether that's back pain, headaches, or something else, affects more Americans than diabetes, heart disease, and cancer combined. Prescription painkillers can help, but carry the risk for abuse and addiction. So, researchers are testing therapies such as acupuncture, massage, and yoga as alternatives.
We want them to do physical therapy. We want good nutrition, good exercise. That's foundational. But then to bring along other things like massage, like acupuncture, as an adjunct to the overall care, we oftentimes see great responses.
Dr. Brent Bauer is Director of Research for the Integrative Medicine Program at Mayo Clinic.
There's quite a bit of research, especially on migraine headaches, but also tension headaches, that acupuncture, again, very effective, not only for treating, but very interestingly with migraine headaches, actually as a preventative. So people who have a propensity for migraine headaches get acupuncture on a regular basis, dramatic reduction in the number of headaches they get.
For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org.
This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining us right now is Patrick Stakanis. He's the CEO and president of Determine. Recap first what your company does.
Sure, Mark. Again, we are focused on business decisions and helping companies make decisions around suppliers, contracts, and really all the information of stuff that they procure. So companies that, that of all sizes, right, need to make decisions every day on their suppliers and how they manage all this data. And we link it all together, one system, one platform, and empower their workforce to be able to make better decisions.
So something like that is a space that a lot of people are getting in. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of need for that. And a lot of companies are creating different variations of a similar solution. So my question for you is, how do you differentiate yourself as a preeminent brand and option in such a noisy competitive space?
Sure. Well, we actually started 3 years ago in the thought process. We saw, and in fact, one of the areas that that I was working with very closely is on the procurement side, was understanding what people are going to want 3 years from now, 3 years ago. And again, then they're looking for suites or platforms of technology. They don't want to have to go looking in 10 different places for information when it comes to their suppliers, when it comes to contracts, their customers, and so on. So we did a period of acquisition over 2 years. We bought three companies together and really created a platform versus a suite of products. And that's a big differentiator. The platform that we have now is one code base of technology. So when you onboard a supplier onto your business, they're inside the database of that platform. So whether I come in through a procure-to-pay opportunity or whether sourcing or whether contract management, all that data from the contracts, the suppliers are all in one spot.
How do you find the right team? Because something like this, a lot of this I can already tell has to do with the people that are behind it, not only creating and developing it, but also tweaking, fine-tuning, and managing which is really important as well. And you guys are in charge of a lot of data. And I know that with technology, a lot of times, stuff can go wrong. Yeah. And so you have to have that team ready to go to make sure that the clients are happy. And I can imagine it's, you know, you guys are charging some good fees for these large clients to have all this stuff. So how do you go about finding great talent to build a team like this?
Yeah, you know, it's a process, right? Yeah. If you think about it, imagine bringing three companies together in just over a year's time period.
Yeah, wow.
Three different cultures. One was actually in France and one in Indiana, one in California, right? So three completely different of cultures. So it really is a matter of getting everybody first on board with what you already have.
Yeah.
And then understanding who believes and who doesn't believe, right? And you'll have a lot of people inside the organization that are from the old culture and the old school, and they will just naturally work themselves out of the organization because they just don't fit the new culture. Yeah. And one of the things I think that companies, a mistake they make, is they try to cram a culture into the business too quickly. And you kind of have to let things happen on its own. In fact, I will tell you that within the first year of bringing these three together, we probably turned over 50% of the company just because people needed to really get on board or get out. And but the way you're able to do that is starting at the top. So with our executives, when I came into this role, I think there were 15 C-level people. Well, we immediately took that down to 8, wow, right? And now, of those 8 individuals, now you have to go out and find the right people to manage each of those positions. And we actually ended up with, you know, probably of the 8, 4 that were original and 4 that were new. And wow, again, the key piece of all that is, you know, you can go out and you can interview all day long, but if you can find people that know people through your existing relationships, and I will tell you that every single person on my executive team right now came from somebody that you already knew him on the executive team or knew him from a previous position outside of that. And then the key is having them go find the people that they know and trust and building it all together. So the better you're networked, the better off you're going to be.
So you, like many other successful CEOs of companies, have been successful as a result of the people and the culture.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad that we brought that up. We've got the CEO and president of Determined, Patrick Stakanis, joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Values is something that comes up when we talk about company mm-hmm. culture. So what are some of the values that you integrate into all the companies, because you found that these values, when adopted by everybody, are what drive success?
Yeah, we actually have a very prescribed set of values that we talk about every day inside.
I knew you would.
Yeah, yeah, we do. No, and I won't go through all of them, but there are 6 core values, and it's collaboration, it's teamwork, it's, you know, all those things that you would expect. But we don't just put them on a board and put them on a cube. We actually espouse them every day. We get everyone to live those values and really understand it and talk about them amongst each other and start meetings with values and actually, you know, work together as an organization. And now we're actually taking that a step further this year. We have the values in place. We have our vision and our mission in place. And now we're actually taking this to put a more heavy emphasis on the actual customer side of it. And how can we espouse our values on our customers as well and get them to pull in? We're a small company. When it comes to some of our nearest competitors who are you know, giants in the industry. But we beat them every day because of the strength of our company and because of the values that we have and the core culture that we have as an organization.
A lot of big companies, surprisingly, have some of the worst company culture mm-hmm. and some of the worst customer service, which is crazy to think that they were able to get so big.
Right.
My question for you as we shift gears is on the topic of sales and marketing.
Sure.
How are you generating and converting leads for this specific type of business that you're in?
Well, again, it's interesting from the standpoint of where we are. We're not a heavily funded company. We're our nearest competitor actually just recently went public and raised, I don't know, $250 million or something like that.
Small number.
What's that?
Small
in
number.
Our world, big numbers. But the thing is, so we're again, applying entrepreneurial tactics, right? Guerrilla marketing, right? What can we do better?
Yeah.
One of the things that we found out, and we have a fantastic marketing staff of like 6, right? It's just a small group. But one of the things that we found out very early is that the marketplace or the people that are buying this type of technology was starving for content. So the big analysts of the world, like Gartner and Forrester mm-hmm. and those guys out there, they talk a bit about it and they talk at a high level. But in the range, in the space that we sell into, there's very little content. So we started going out, doing customers interviews, webinars, having our featured blog every single week. I blog every single month. Key members of my staff do as well. And interestingly enough, people read our content. They're starving for it. So that's been a really key thing for us. Not a lot of money. Get the blogs out there, do webinars with key partners in our space, and we drive a tremendous amount of leads for our sales force just through doing that alone. And it's simple and it's easy, but highly effective.
That's the space that I live and breathe in, so I love that you brought that up, is the online social content. It's capitalizing on a trend right now, which is videos.
Mm-hmm.
You can do video series, you can do, you know, Instagram stories, Facebook Live, Snapchat. There's so many different variations of video content out there, but it's a big trend. You're capitalizing on it. My question, though, is, which avenues, which platforms have you found to be most effective for you? Is it Facebook? Is it LinkedIn?
Yeah, LinkedIn is huge. Facebook really, it's a consumer app. There's really nothing there from a business mm-hmm. perspective. You can have thousands and thousands of followers, but who will never buy your product. And one of the things, again, we talked a little bit before about you know, what entrepreneurs can do and can't do, and what they, the mistakes they made. One of them is that relying on social media, just because they're on Facebook or do something cool or have a funny video, doesn't mean people are going to buy your stuff. Yeah. You can have a million, you know, viewers of a video, but not one person will buy your stuff if they're the wrong
and
viewers.
And I see that all the time.
Yeah, so LinkedIn is a great one, by the way. We put a lot of information out on LinkedIn. Our own website, we use a ton. And then we link it to those types of things. We leverage information from Gartner and from Forrester, and we do joint things with them. And some of it's paid, some of it's not paid. But being able to drive people through your site through using that kind of content, you know, the broader reach you can get, but you go too far, and then it's just vanilla. So it has to be poignant. It has to be that rifle approach.
Well, you said Determined right now is a small organization for you guys. My question is, you probably have a big vision to scale this. How are you going to go about doing that?
Yeah, so all of those things we've been talking about, I got the right team in place. So, you know, kind of going back to the three things that I talked about, the market is there. Market's growing 15-20% per year. It's a big market, $7 billion. We have a small piece of that. I now have a product. We've recently just, or are launching our Determined Cloud platform, right, which is a new and innovative way to do this business for our customers. It's exciting. Nobody else is doing it. We're the first ones there. And then the last piece is now I got the right people. So I got a market, I got a product, and I got people. So with that, there's no doubt we're going to kill this thing.
So last question as we wrap up. We got a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs. They're trying to make the decision. They're listening to shows like this to put the pieces together to say, when is the right time for me to cut the cord from my source of income that pays for my bills, allows me to live? When can I cut that cord and go all in as an entrepreneur, business owner? What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? I'm not sure that I always did it the right way because I was an all-in kind of guy typically. But I got to tell you, if you can, and especially young entrepreneurs coming out of college or maybe a few years with a company, if you can kind of take that corporate job and work it and get experience and learn deep and try to grow inside that company and then massage your ideas along the way until you think you have the right idea and before you jump ship, and then really try to get other people to do things for you and use other people's money. Yeah. Do things for you until you're absolutely ready to jump ship. The younger you are, the better. It's harder to do it at 45 years old.
Fast when you're young, right?
When I jumped in, things go fast. Yeah. You lose a little, you gain a little, you're okay. But as you get older, it gets a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
But again, having the right people surrounded you and maybe having a little bit of money saved up to be able to live. But you gotta know that when you jump in, as you know, Mark, with entrepreneurialism, you go all in at some point. So you can test it for a while, but when you think you got it right, you gotta go.
Yeah, I love that advice.
I actually had one person tell me one point in the business, and we were struggling, and he said, "Do you still have a 401k?" I'm like, "Well, of course I do." He goes, "Well, do you still have, you know, this house and that house?" I'm like, "Of course I do." He goes, "Well, then you haven't gone far enough yet, right?" Mm-hmm. He said, when that's all gone,
you didn't
then
burn all the bridges.
What, sorry?
You didn't burn all the bridges.
No. Well, that's another thing. Never burn any bridges because you never know who's going to come back and
I love that.
Need help.
So somebody says, "I want to learn more about you. Maybe even look a little bit more into this thing that you guys sell at Determine as your offer." Where can they do this?
Yeah, determined.com. You'll find us. We're out there. We've got a fantastic website. And all the information you could ever need about who we are, what we are, and where we're headed is all there.
There you go. Patrick, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Mark.
Appreciate you. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We connect a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
How do you grow your business quickly? I'm Alex Worley with the Business Rockstars Minute. Well, there is no secret sauce for instant success, but here are a few tried and true methods from experienced entrepreneurs that can help accelerate growth in your business. Number one, hire the right people. Before you can think about growth, you need a solid staff to help you achieve your goals. Number two, invest in yourself. You most likely will not see any profit at all when you first start out. Any money you make should go directly to helping you grow. Number three, always think ahead. Planning your next step by anticipating all possible scenarios is the best way to stay grounded as your business evolves. Number four, focus on your customer experience. Deliver quality experiences and products every single time. Customers' perceptions of your business can really make or break your business. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Business Rockstars.
Have you heard about Newsmax TV? It's America's fastest-growing cable news channel in 70 million homes. Every minute, every day, watch Newsmax for breaking news on President Trump. Plus, get insights from Bill O'Reilly, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, Mike Reagan, and more. You can find Newsmax TV on DirecTV, Xfinity, Dish, Optimum, Spectrum, Fios, UVerse, Suddenlink, Wow, and dozens of cable systems. So check your guide now and watch Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
Guess what? Right now is the perfect time to tackle those home projects you've been putting off. So come summertime, you can just sit back and relax. Home Advisor can help get you started. Home Advisor matches you to the right pro for the job in seconds. You can read reviews and even book appointments online. Home Advisor can help with any home project, big or small, painting, plumbing, even remodeling. Find a great pro now before the busy season hits. Go to homeadvisor.com or download the free app. Home Advisor.
Here is your healthcare update with America's healthcare advocate, Kerry Hall.
Do antioxidants really have a positive effect on our health and reverse the aging process? I'll be right back to tell you. Do antioxidants really reverse the aging process? Well, here's some real numbers that should make a difference to you. Death rates for people that take antioxidants are down by 50%. Cancer deaths are down by 13%. Cancer survival rates are up by 50%. Heart attack and stroke down by 50%. Skin cancer down by 70%. Infections are down by 50%. And cataracts are down by 27 to 36%. Those are some pretty powerful numbers, ladies and gentlemen, that show that antioxidants really do make a big difference in your life if you choose to take them. They can really reverse the aging process and allow you a much happier, healthier life. The cost of vitamins and minerals is small, especially compared with the money saved on drugs, doctor bills, hospitalization, and the ultimate effects of combined aging.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars. I am joined by Viola Lee. She is the co-founder of Raw Green Organics, and we're going to talk about overcoming obstacles in entrepreneurship today, which there are a lot of them, aren't there? Just yes. A few that you've probably encountered. Let's start from the beginning when you transitioned from more of a 9-to-5, maybe it was 9-to-6, 7 job to starting your business. What was the first obstacle you encountered?
I think the first obstacle is you really need to make a commitment and just go for it. When you start worrying about, well, am I going to start making X amount of dollars? Is it going to come in? Am I going to get it funded within the first month? I mean, that just has to go out the door. You have to make a commitment and just go for it and know that you may or may not have a salary for a while.
I always say I always say that entrepreneurship is so much mental too. You have to maintain your confidence and, you know, it's natural for fear, self-doubt and worries to creep in. But how do you deal with those icky feelings and move past them?
Well, I would have to, if I were to say I woke up every morning thinking, wow, I'm on the top of the world, I'd be lying.
Yeah. Which is refreshing. So yeah, thanks for being honest.
I'd be lying. There are so many things out there. And as an entrepreneur, sometimes when you start, you don't know what you don't know. So you might think that you have a great plan because you're really good at one thing and, you know, you never fail. Everything that you plan seems to work out. And you might think that you've had a couple backup plans and things are going to work out, but there's always going to be a bump in the road in everything you do. And I think the one thing is to never be afraid of failing. And that's okay, because you have to have thick skin. You'll fail, or someone's going to say that, you know, that was a stupid idea, or that is completely idiotic. And fine, you know, you take what they have to say, you know, look at it. And there's never any bad advice. All advice is somewhat good advice because it's something that you didn't know before, right? And I think that you just take that and you just keep on going. You can't be afraid to fail.
How do you differentiate the people who are giving constructive criticism and maybe destructive criticism? Because there's a lot of haters out there, right?
Yeah, there is. I mean, there are going to be both. People with constructive criticism are going to give you criticism on a product and they'll tell you why. Because of these four things.
They have your best interest in mind.
They have your best interest, right? Definitely. And their views may or may not be wrong. or they might be right. I'm not sure, but you should definitely take them into consideration. And then there are people who just tell you, well, that's stupid. But why? And they don't, they're just maybe writing you off because it's not important to them, or they don't find that it's interesting. So, you know, there's something for everyone, and not everyone's going to be interested in what you do.
And going back to the failure part, it sounds like a lot of it's just perspective. Instead of seeing it as, oh, shame on me, I made a mistake, it's like, okay, I can learn from this, right?
And definitely. So if you're in a job before where you might have been the A-plus student, A-plus employee, and you're always, you know, going through projects and you are the best of the best and you always did it well. But sometimes it's different when you don't have as many resources. You have to make do with what you have. And there might, things are not going to be perfect. You may not have a perfect business plan the first time around. And a business plan always, God, it's always changing. It's always changed like a moving target. So when you fail, it's just, it happens.
Just keep, pick yourself back up and keep moving forward.
Pick yourself up and keep on going, because if you believe in something, then that's all that matters. Just keep on going for it. And that's what's going to drive you.
Yeah. And you've known a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs who have started and then all of a sudden it was like, whoa, this is a lot harder, takes a lot more work than I thought. Would you say that that's true, that it is harder than people think?
Well, it definitely is, because when you're starting out, you might not have all the team members that you need. You know, maybe there might be like 4 people or 5 people. And now and let's say you need the creative person. Oh, shoot, but we don't have the creative person. We need the salesperson, the marketing person. And you're not going to be able to do that. So as an entrepreneur, you're going to have to wear multiple hats. And a lot of times when you're great at being a team player or great at being an executor, sometimes you have to step aside and be more of a mentor for your other team members. And that could be harder at times.
So what about when you're just starting out and you are wearing multiple hats, but maybe you don't know how to wear some of those hats? Did you just have to learn on the go, or how did you educate yourself?
Oh, you definitely, when there are no resources, you definitely learn as you go. You know, you have your base plan of what you need to execute on, and then you just go down the path. You might not be a logistics expert, but guess what? You're going to try to be, and you try to get as much advice from people as you can in the industry. There's always free advice. So if you can get it, take it. We always try to look for different people for advice, if we can find board members. And there's always people willing to help you. And that's part of the thing about failing too. So a lot of times people say, well, you know, I got rejected by this investor or that investor. But guess what? You know, in that 15 minutes that even though he said, nope, thanks, why don't you go find another lead and maybe, you know, we'll call you or whatnot. But they'll give you some kind of advice in there. There's going to be constructive criticism that you're going to be able to take and say, shoot, I didn't think about that. Now you learn and you're smarter for the next time around.
Totally. Now, it's very busy being an entrepreneur. How do you maintain a little bit of work-life balance?
Well, for me, now that I have a two-year-old, it is tough. I just have to squeeze it in. If anything, working out is like, I actually have to pencil it into my calendar.
Is that one of the tips you have for entrepreneurs, is actually scheduling outside of work things?
Yes, scheduling in. The workout, it's scheduled, it's on the calendar, you know, at 7:40 in the morning, it's scheduled in. And sometimes if it's a 40-minute workout, it's a 40-minute workout. You get a spin class in, it's great. And, you know, I try to multitask too. So I have a long commute, so I do all my calls in the car. I try to get as much done as I can on my kind of downtime.
And I know a lot of moms who are entrepreneurs sometimes feel guilty. Do you ever have that feeling, and how do you deal with it?
Well, the time, because I'm trying to rush home thinking, okay, I'm going to get home next, you know, shoot, another hour's gone by, another hour's gone by. And by the time I get home, it's, let's say, 9 o'clock. My poor kid's already in bed and I can't wake him up. And then I might get some time with them in the morning, but then I'm off to work again. So I do feel guilty. So when I actually have downtime, I try to spend as much time as I can with my son. I end up lugging him around with me wherever I go as well. And we just make an activity.
Totally. Thanks so much to my guest, Viola Lee. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business.